We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. That fine gentleman over there is always back in his humble abode in the heart of the Midwest, Chicago, Illinois. Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I just took a shower. As did you,
yeah.
And I think we do our best shows when we are refreshed and clean.
Yes.
And the shower is also a really good place to brainstorm and to think on things. And so I'm always so glad to get to California and record and do all sorts of fun things in California. I'm not happy to record in California. It's a mess in there. I do it on a card table. But I'm always happy to get there to do California things. But I'm always happy to return because I have my home set up. And yeah. I truly feel like myself, not in Illinois, but in this specific room with this specific equipment, with all of my dongles, with all of my adapters, with my computer, and everything set up just so. So this, if it's not a good show, it's purely intellectual because I'm dumb and not creative. If it is a good show, that's a large reason why.
Well, look, you told me what the concept for this show is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We're returning to our roots in a sense, because
True.
We came up with the concept about 5 minutes before we hit the record button. We've done this pretty much throughout the entire run here of the Solid Verbal. Just kind of come up with things on the fly.
Yeah.
This was your creation.
Yeah.
We're talking about dunks today.
We are, which is a great word. It's a great word to say,
yeah.
Dunk. It has a lot of different meanings, a lot of different uses. Obviously, the basketball dunking, the dunk tank. You can dunk somebody in a pool, like, manually. You can dunk food, like, dunk fries into sauces, or you can dunk Oreos. Donuts.
Sure.
Obviously, you can dunk in football. You can dink and dunk, right? That's a strategy that you could employ. But this sort of, the timing of the show coincides with the NBA dunk contest, which I watched 0 seconds of.
Same.
But I heard it was a disaster.
Same.
Nonetheless, I'm still a dunking enthusiast. I am still somebody who lowered the rim on my driveway basket growing up to, like, you know, it depended when I was super young, 6 feet, 7 feet, 8 feet, whatever, and did like my D Brown cover my eyes. You know, I would try to replicate all of those things. And I had little brothers and I would just dunk on them all day long. I don't love dunking on Twitter. I think that idea is kind of passe and stupid. But nonetheless, once again, I love a good dunk. I love a good dunk, and I want to evaluate the jobs and potential of 2021 first-year head coaches, your Shane Beamers, your Andy Avalai, your...
Was that plural for Andy Avalos?
I believe that's his preference. That's his family's preference. And across the country, Blake Anderson, guys that had a year one situation, Burt Bielema. And not just figure out how they did and what they did and where they progressed their program and where perhaps they took a step back based on what the previous guy did, but also just how high they can fly and just what they would do, like Michael Scott.
You have no idea how high I can fly.
Right.
What they would do in the open court with the ball, not necessarily dunking, but if they're going for a fundamentally sound layup, is that their ceiling in terms of how high they can fly? Tomahawk jam, thinking they can dunk, but bricking it terribly and spraining an ankle. What is the literal and figurative height that we believe these coaches can fly if everything adds up the way that they're intending?
Oh, yeah. I like this. I like this a lot. I'm already looking at the list of first-year coaches trying to figure out what Lance Leipold's doing if he's just got open floor in front of him.
Sure.
What is Lance Leipold, Kansas, doing? Open floor, all gas, no brakes. What's he doing?
Yeah.
We can
talk. Did you go to basketball camp, by the way?
No.
Was that ever a thing you did?
No.
You never went to basketball? You never even tried to get better at basketball on any level?
No.
Nah, was it your thing?
I you know what I was when I played youth basketball? Mm-hmm. I was the guy who went and stood in the corner and said, pass me the ball. And every now and again, I'd hit a
screens.
Shot.
Yeah.
My career best for points in organized basketball was eight. Mm-hmm. I had 1 8-point game.
Oh.
That was the best I ever did. I wasn't a rebounder. I wasn't a dribbler. I was a good glue guy. Like, I got along with everybody on the team. I liked to play defense. I often went for the steal, but rarely got it. And I just was not a scorer. I was more of just kind of like there to build team morale. I was not good at basketball.
You sound more like glue means you're doing the little things and making effort. If you're standing in the corner not scoring, I'm not sure what you're holding.
No, I'd run around. Oh, okay. But my shot of choice was from the corner. What I did in the open floor, and Mama H will attest to this, open floor, nobody in front of me, went up there, bricked it on the first try. This is not a dunk. This is a layup. Got the rebound, put it in on the second attempt, only to find out that the reason the floor was open is because it was my own basket. I did that.
Uh-huh.
Off the tip off.
An own goal, an own basket. Yeah, no, the reason I asked about basketball camp is I'm going to set the standard here. The standard here is obviously Nick Saban in the open floor doing whatever he wants, like the greatest dunk, you know, Dr. J, Michael Jordan, whatever. I just remember in basketball camp, we would watch videos while eating pizza and tater tots. That was the chosen food midday playing sports all day.
The two food groups, sure.
Shout out Jack Haley, rest in peace, and his camp at CSUN, Cal State Northridge. But we'd watch these VHS tapes of Michael Jordan in slow motion. They licensed music, and it would just be Michael Jordan in slow motion dunking on like Zil. I was going to say Zildjunas Ilgauskas. I'm screwing up my generations, but dunking on like Kevin Willis. With Berlin playing in the background.
So, like,
Tom Chambers.
Were they trying to show you how to do the dunks, or was it just kind of like motivation as you were eating your junk food?
Just buying time. Just buying time to get these kids out of the camp, whatever. So that's the absolute apex is the Berlin take my breath away Michael Jordan visual. And everything else, I don't know what the bottom, the baseline is, like Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly, where he's just sweating and bricking and yelling and confident with no reason. Kobe! So that's, I don't know, somewhere, those are your bookends of this game.
All right,
so we're taking, you have a list of first-year coaches. I looked into the Danalytics of where these teams improved and fell off in terms of points per drive on offense and defense. I also looked at how these teams finished their regular season, right? A lot of how we can judge first-year head coaches, which isn't entirely fair, can be looked at in terms of how a team finished, you know, how the motivation kept up. I know we have housekeeping to go to, but those are the things we're going to look at, and then we're going to discuss their open floor ceiling.
Well, I am excited for this show. I'm glad we have this concept. I'm glad you have the Steve Carell bit as well. That's always fun. Can you play that again? I enjoy that
clip.
Yeah,
of course.
You have no idea how high I can fly.
How high can first-year coaches fly? That will be our game du jour here. Thank you for stopping back and listening to The Solid Verbal. Maybe you're finding us for the first time. If that is the case, don't forget to subscribe or follow. If you're a long-timer, please do go on out and rate or review the show wherever it will let you. Verballers.com is about to go off the hizzy, as the kids say, Dan.
Oh, no, they don't anymore. They definitely don't anymore.
Verballers.com is where you can go and find all the bonus stuff that we're doing or are about to do. we would encourage you to go out there, listen to our shows a little bit early. You can get video access to all of our shows. You can also hop on the Discord server. We've got a really exciting off-topic show that I think is probably going to drop next week. So stay tuned for that. You can get access to our weekly Brew&A show as well. And in addition, the cool new thing that we're planning to announce next week. Hint, hint.
Correct. Hint, hint. Oh, man, we're getting close.
We are.
We keep X-ing out the calendar days. We're getting real close. It'll be end of the month-ish, I want to say. End of the month, beginning of March. That's when... Oh, man.
It's when the clouds part.
Yeah.
And the new thing we've been working on for...
The creative kimono parts.
The creative kimono parts and the new thing we get to announce we're excited about. So, verballers.com is where you can find that. Solidgiveaway.com is back and operational. Compete. I guess you're not competing, but compete for your opportunity to win a Jonathan Taylor tailback signed Wisconsin mini helmet. Follow along on social media, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. And last but certainly not least, this show is sponsored by our good friends over at Geico, Dan.
Indeed.
Let's get into our game.
All right. So once again, we are looking at, I guess, freshman coaches, right? And the job that they did when they were merely freshmen.
Compromise.
Sorry. That's my singing. Okay. So there isn't a standard rubric ahead of where we are going with the visual of them, what they're doing in the open floor, attempting to dunk or finish emphatically. But you have a list. We can start wherever you want.
I have a list.
This is my disclaimer. It's an especially or was an especially difficult time to be a first year head coach. And I think it will be for the time being because of the timing of early signing day, because of the number of transfers now, because of eligibility coming off of COVID with the added eligibility. So there's all sorts of different roster wrinkles that didn't really exist about 5 years ago.
Roster wrinkles is going to be the name of our emo band. Yeah, I like
Thank
that.
Thank you. Oh, I like that. So with that caveat, with that disclaimer, obviously there's always a reason, generally not a good one, why a new coach is hired. Sometimes the previous guy did so well at a place set up for success that they had to hire a new guy. Not the case all the time. So we are going to look at a number of these guys replaced fired coaches, and there's a reason. So you can't fully judge anybody on year one and sometimes even year two. By year three, you generally can. We've already done a year two show. So now here is our freshman evaluation for some reason with how they would do in the open floor, dunking the ball. Where should we start, Ty?
I want to start with Tennessee.
Oh.
I want to start with Josh Heupel.
Yes.
Josh Heupel came in. He replaced Jeremy Pruitt fairly late in the cycle. You'll recall the Pruitt stuff exploded. Tennessee had gone 3-7 in 2020. It just wasn't a good campaign. Danny White came up to Tennessee. He hired his guy and Josh Heupel away from UCF. Tennessee went 7-6 last season. Lost the bowl game, 7-5 regular season. Second order wins, which is a statistic that I like to look at just to, I don't know, get Bill C's take on things. Second order wins had Tennessee as an 8-win team.
Okay.
Josh Heupel at Tennessee is a really interesting, I guess, starter case for us here, because that is a situation that I was not all that excited about. I didn't really know what to make of that hire to begin with. Maybe it's because I didn't know enough about Josh Heupel. I don't know. But I think year one was very promising. As I look at the SP Plus final standings from Bill C., he's got Tennessee as a top 10 team. So I think of the way that our thinking has evolved on Tennessee throughout the course of the last year. And for me, I've come a long ways towards accepting this program as maybe one that is now on the straight and narrow, about to pop in 2022. And definitely, I think beyond a shadow of a doubt, better now than it was when he first got there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it wasn't a, when you look at what Tennessee was able to do this past year, it was not a luck thing. They started off a little bit shaky, but it wasn't a crazy turnover margin year. It wasn't constantly playing teams with beat up quarterbacks or something like that. I think it was solid progress. And when you look at what Tennessee was able to do as it relates to the 2020 year, which again, grain of salt, they had the number three most improved defense in the country, or excuse me, number three most improved offense when it comes to points per drive, which is not surprising when you look at some of the fireworks that the Vols were able to generate. The defense was slightly worse, and with how they finished, winning 3 of 5, competitive for a stretch against Alabama, but ultimately the Tide run away, not competitive against Georgia, but certainly the Kentucky win upon further reflection, you know, certainly impressive. So I don't know how you come away anything but encouraged. And now look, it's Hendon Hooker, and he was kind of a pre-formed successful quarterback coming in to Tennessee in the portal. Wasn't considered to be started. I think Joe Milton won that job initially.
Joe Milton, yeah.
So things sort of course corrected in Knoxville. They have what I think was a top 20 class, you know, in the first full Josh Heupel class, 8th in the SEC. They do have, or at least in this class, a quarterback of the future. I believe his name is Taven Jackson from Indiana. So I think there is, if I'm going to look at this in the dunk context, that Josh Heupel is going to confidently, with especially how you look at how he throws the ball downfield, confidently go up for and succeed in dunking. It's not going to be the prettiest and most emphatic, but I think he can clear rim. Absolutely can clear rim and not make a fool of himself with all eyes on him like you did.
Are you able to get rim? Were you ever able to get rim when you jumped?
I think like grazing rim. Nothing that I could ever do that would be impressive to people. Like, because I'm taller than you too. So I was probably about 6 feet in high school, but with the ball in my hands, I was not soaring over people. It was like running super hard, unencumbered, holding nothing. I could maybe graze rim, or at least the bars supporting the rim coming down.
I could get net.
That was about my limit.
I could get net.
Look at you.
I could get net, and that was exciting.
Yeah, of course.
Josh Heupel, I think, can aspire to greater heights. There's a little bit of flash there. A little bit of flash there in the way he conducts his offense. I think we're going to see more of it in 2022. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
The interesting thing will be, in this marketplace, in this world, if Tennessee is a destination job for Josh Heupel in a world in which destination jobs don't exist, and that can be a difficult place to navigate, that if he gets an offer at a bigger place or a comparable place, because he doesn't have Tennessee roots, obviously, going back to his time at Oklahoma, that didn't work out, it will be interesting to see if he carries them to an SEC East division winning place if he's long for Knoxville. But that's a terrific problem to have if you're a Vol fan.
I see this situation as an alley-oop. And I'm not talking about a dunk contest grade alley-oop where there's a windmill or a behind the back or any kind of antics. I'm talking game used alley-oop, makes a break down the baseline, point guard throws it up, catches it mid-flight, two-handed dunk.
So more of a specialized dunker.
More of a specialized dunker, but there when he needs to be, able to throw it down if he has to.
Okay.
Not necessarily with the glitz and glamour that you'd expect of a dunk contest or even in the open floor, right?
Right.
Where you can do whatever you want. But I see it as an efficient dunk here.
A rim roller.
Yeah, maybe because, and I didn't think this up because I just heard about the game, but efficiency really was the name of the game for this Tennessee offense. They're very efficient. So I see him as an efficient two-handed dunker, somebody who could definitely get to those heights. The question is a two-handed dunk, a standard two-handed dunk in the open floor as an alley-oop, is that enough to get you over the hump of the Georgia Bulldogs? Like, you're not winning any dunk contests against Georgia.
I think it is my opinion that Tennessee, to whatever extent, even having been blown out by the Dogs, have slightly or respectably close the gap. It's still pretty wide. But what the SEC East has needed, with Florida's inconsistencies, with South Carolina falling off the map, with Kentucky looking good but kind of having a ceiling because of some poor offenses before last season, and now Liam Cohen's gone, the East and the top of the East, not necessarily winning the East, but that top group in the East has definitely kept a place warm for Tennessee.
Yeah.
Because nobody is necessarily claiming it right now alongside the Dogs with now Florida starting over.
Let's go over to Auburn.
Yeah.
What worries me a little bit about Auburn in light of recent circumstances, you've seen the clip where they take sort of a normal peon, somebody who can't jump, like me, frankly, can't actually dunk, but they give him a trampoline and they tell him run and jump on the trampoline. And that's going to give you the clearance to get up to be above the rim, Steve Carell style. How high can you fly, Dan? And that's going to allow them to dunk. But we've all seen the clips where they put somebody in that circumstance and they just short it.
Goes wrong. Yeah.
They short it. Either they go a little bit long and they maybe rack their head on the backboard, or perhaps they just come up embarrassingly short.
Right.
Frankly, I don't know where we're at with Brian Harsin. I had a lot of optimism for the start of the Brian Harsin regime because Bo Nix was playing better. We saw what Auburn did on the road against Penn State. Granted, Penn State maybe didn't end up being a world beater, but that was still an awesome moment very early on in the season.
Yeah.
Auburn finished 6-7. Their second order wins was 6.7. So they were pretty much right where Bill C thought they should be.
Mm-hmm.
This is on the heels of a 6-5 campaign that got Gus Malzahn fired. Now, Gus Malzahn was on the hot seat, not on the hot seat for a good 5 years running at Auburn, right? 6-5 was really just the culmination of a bunch of years where he was sort of on a warm seat. But Brian Harsin to come in to start strong in the way that they did, and then for it to sort of peter out, and now all of this goofiness with respect to the internal investigation, 19 guys transferring out. Go back and listen to the interview we did with Justin Ferguson of AuburnObserver.com, and you can get more details on what exactly is going on inside the ropes of Auburn. But I'm not sure, frankly, what's happening here for Brian Harsin on an open floor.
I think he looks like he might have the ability to dunk it, but refuses to. Maybe his dad was like, no hot dogging, no showboating, play the game like it was meant to be played, and he wears shorter shorts, and he's just going up for layups, sometimes doing like going up for layup, but pump faking, so somebody trailing flies by him, and then he goes for like a very boring layup. And maybe that's reminiscent of the lack of recruiting, the lack of flash on the trail, guys leaving, and Brian Harsin being stubborn of just like, I'm just going to do a jump stop and put it in the hoop off of the backboard. but I digress. The thing, the actual football things to know about Brian Harsin as a freshman at Auburn. The defense under Derek Mason, who's now gone, improved decently from where it was.
Yeah, it did.
In the final year of the Gus Malzahn era. It improved decently, especially up front. The offense did regress a bit, but you can attribute some of that to Bo Nix's injury at the end of the season, and you know, the offense not really having a consistent, like, you know, they would pop against schools, they would pop for a half against schools, and then they would disappear, like in the Texas A&M game. So overall, it did regress a bit from where it had been, which was a more talented place in terms of offensive skill, I believe, if you look at the entirety of that offensive roster before the Brian Harsin era. Auburn did lose 4 of 5. They were competitive, but also that notion of being competitive includes kind of blowing the Alabama game, the Mississippi State game, like an ugly sort of competitive at times. So I'm going to stick with my stubbornly insisting on a jump stop banked layup, that there are moments of fundamentally sound play, but ultimately the highs that Brian Harsin is realistically trying to get to are not all that impressive.
I love the thought of running down open floor, pump fake, guy flies by, and it's really just a small bank shot.
Just a little set shot, little bank shot.
Used to practice those back in the day, Dan, of NAA in-house basketball when I played on the black team and the tan team. I was never particularly good at any of them.
You didn't even have team names? You were just like, that's Ty. He's on the tan team.
That's exactly what it was. I was on the tan team, and I was on the black team. What's going on? Yeah.
Whew. You need to come out west. We had leagues that licensed Bulls and Hornets and all that stuff. Okay. Where are we going next?
I'm in agreement with you, by the way. I kind of feel the same. I don't know what to make of Harsin. That could go 1,000 different ways.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's go to Illinois and Brett Bielema. Okay.
All right.
They went 5-7 this past Indeed. Season with a 4.7 second order wins tally from Bill C.
Okay.
This is
a little bit of luck.
A little bit of luck. There was a 2-6 season that got Lovie Smith fired.
Excuse you. Houston Texan NFL head coach Lovie Smith somehow. Continue.
He used Illinois' springboard, of course.
Yes.
The Bielema hire was always interesting. You know, he's a big personality. Folks mm-hmm. are familiar with Brett Bielema from his time at Wisconsin and Arkansas. He's been around the sport for a good long time. Mm-hmm. And him getting hired at Illinois was, in a sense, a homecoming because he's from Illinois. He obviously coached for a good long time in the Big Ten. But yep. you're just never really sure what to expect when you yep. put a guy like that in a situation like Illinois. Now, Illinois, I thought they were pesky this year, man. They were plucky. They had their moments. Yeah. They beat Penn State in that weird penalty kick over like 9 overtime game, whatever it was.
Beat Minnesota, yep.
Beat Minnesota, right? And so it definitely felt like this team was playing with more organization than we had seen at any point in the recent past. So I'm yep. optimistic here that this could also be a standard issue dunk type of situation. At worst case, just a normal layup.
Right.
A normal layup. Maybe they're not getting up there to the rim, but Brett Bielema, can he run up to the backboard and do a standard issue layup? Maybe with both hands.
Okay.
You know, he can do it righty, he can do it lefty.
Right.
That's what I feel like we're looking at here with Illinois. Maybe not the glitz and glamour, but they can get the ball in the hoop.
So I'm with you. I am optimistic. And if you look at what Illinois was able to do in terms of improvement from 2020 to 2021, the offense and the results on the field in terms of scoreboard activity was largely unchanged. The defense dramatically improved, especially in stopping big plays, which I think is crazy important in taking a team to whatever that next level is. You stop yeah. big plays,
yeah, yeah.
then you start covering spreads, then you start turning blowouts into closer losses, you start getting offenses off the field. I think that's an extremely positive step for Illinois. They ran the ball actually really well 2 years ago in Lovie Smith's final year when they went 2-6 and sort of took a step back on the ground last year. They were a little bit more predictable without really much of an aerial attack. But I think Illinois is in a pretty decent place. I think it's a good sign with how they finished the season. So they won 3 of 5. The losses were competitive. And as we mentioned, they beat Minnesota and Penn State, which I think is just, it's a good sign in terms of buy-in. And they recruited what I think they were finished 12th in the Big Ten, and it's heavy focus on offensive line. They're trying to rebuild things up front. And there was the whole quotes about, you know, Brett Bielema, you know, allegedly trashing what Illinois had on the roster along the offensive line, but then he sort of walked it back and talked about improvement. I have Bart Bielema in the open floor, obviously, as there's going to be a lot of mass and a lot of momentum, as he, like, a confidence to somebody attacking the hoop.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he knows his limitations in terms of what he can do soaring through the air, but I also think there is a borderline recklessness to Bert Bielema in the open floor that somebody's going to try and slide under him to take a charge, but Illinois is the kind of team that they're gonna bank on that guy flinching or doing something that ultimately it's going to be a blocking foul, and that Illinois will happily, you know, miss that open floor layup but get to the free throw line and wear teams down, you know, whatever it takes. And so, yeah, I think there's going to be an efficiency to open floor Bielema in the air that he can find under his feet.
Yeah, but it's in a good spot, right? It's better
Definitely.
Than it was. And
definitely.
There's no way that you can come out of the 2021 campaign without feeling better about where the team is headed.
Yeah.
Like, so much about basketball, especially if you're trying to play that dribble drive game,
mm-hmm.
is making sure that you have somebody who can just get the ball in the hoop. It doesn't matter if it's a dunk or if it's a layup, but you just need somebody who's efficient at doing it. Somebody who knows what they're doing, looks like they've been there before.
Right.
Bielema has been there before. He's gotten to great heights with all of the programs that that he's coached, if only for a passing moment at Arkansas. So I feel pretty good about where it's at. Doesn't always need to be glitz and glamour, but I think he's going to know what to do with the ball in his hands.
And you'll remember, by the way, the process by which they hired Brett Bielema was a lot better than what it was hiring Lovie Smith when they fired Tim Beckman late in the process after all those allegations. And so I don't know if Lovie ever just got off on the right foot, and he was just sort of available and familiar.
Yeah.
And so now Brett Bielema, available, familiar, but also, you know, the momentum of his hiring and his tenure thus far has just made a lot more sense.
It's made a lot more sense. I know there are Arkansas people screaming out there, he went 8-5. You call those great heights? Okay, maybe I took a little bit of liberty there.
But it's fit. It's also fit. It's also place. It's also time in one's career. Yeah, it ended up disappointing at Arkansas. But we also saw somebody at Arkansas right after him who scored on their own hoop, a la Ty Hildenbrandt and Chad Morris. So in retrospect, Brett Bielema not the absolute worst that we've seen from Arkansas. So it's fine.
Moving on, let's go to South Carolina and Shane Beamer.
Let's.
I am excited to hear what you have to say about Shane Beamer in South Carolina. So,
yeah,
Shane Beamer in year one went 7-6.
Mm-hmm.
Second order wins was 6-4. So what that tells me is that this wasn't necessarily smoke and mirrors. A little mm-hmm. bit of luck, but maybe not as much luck as you would expect. And I say that because I recall when we did our SEC previews, we fully expected South Carolina to be a tire fire.
Sure.
Not only was the schedule brutal, but there was roster turnover. We didn't know who was playing quarterback. Zebediah Nolan was going to mm-hmm. be the quarterback. A GA, we didn't find that out until like a week before the season started. So it was like a whole thing. They were trying to duct tape and chicken wire this thing together pretty much from the second that Shane Beamer got on campus.
Yep.
Lo and behold, I mean, they end up putting together a really nice campaign, going to a bowl game. He gets the Duke's Mayo dumped on him. This is a great campaign. Now they got Spencer Rattler coming in, which by any measure is a huge win for that program. I don't care if he's, you know, a quarter of what he was last season at Oklahoma. He's still better than what they had. So there's a lot of forward momentum here for Shane
for sure.
Beamer. The question obviously is, can he maintain it?
Mm-hmm.
Can he maintain it? Can he continue to build a roster? Will he stay at South Carolina if things continue on the trajectory, look, it's got to be asked.
And has been at major programs, yeah.
He was at Oklahoma, right?
Georgia, yeah.
So what do you think of Beamer? Is this a temporary flash in the pan that we saw?
Right.
Or is this the start of something really special?
Probably somewhere in between. I think the ceiling is pretty high for what South Carolina could be. Just geographically, I think they should be able to, especially with Shane Beamer's personality and energy, be able to recruit. But Will Muschamp was able to recruit. Steve Spurrier was able to recruit, and Spurrier had South Carolina at an all-time high. But right. Where South Carolina is right now, so their defense got dramatically better. And so we always used to talk about how Will Muschamp, South Carolina, the defense would improve and the offense would fall off a cliff. Offense would improve, defense would fall off a cliff. So South Carolina's defense got dramatically better. The offense was definitely worse, but a lot of that can be attributed to health and, you know, quarterbacks coming in and out and, you know, uncertainty week to week. They start, a usual receiver, a high school quarterback in the bowl game, which was ended up being very successful. Dakarian Joyner. I should remember these names. There's so many names to remember. But South Carolina was good. They weren't great, but you know, they beat Florida. They beat Auburn. Yeah. You know, these are the context of what Florida and Auburn were at the end of the year is certainly worth talking about, but they were competitive in that loss to Missouri. And from where they were, especially early on in the year and the lack of points scored, I think there's an energy. I think there's an excitement. I think there's a buy-in, which is everything you want from a guy taking over a program that was middling to not in a good place. And so Shane Beamer is the type of open floor aggressor that I think is almost a one-man fast break. He is in such good shape and he is so excited that he's always pushing the ball. And so anytime the defense is sort of lollygagging, getting back, there's Shane Beamer turning it into a fast break, right? He's pushing the tempo. He's finding every little crease and every little advantage, even if he is not the most athletic guy. You know, maybe he's the one who's sort of crouching and ducking behind somebody on an inbounds pass after a scored basket, and he's just doing the quick steal and putting it up. So I don't think he's getting crazy high, but I think his effort and enthusiasm and how in shape of an open floor player gets him some easy buckets more and more year over year in the open floor. Not dunking, but I think he can tap backboard. I think he can get backboard during a layup. Sure.
One of those deals where he sort of kisses up against the glass and then just for the hell of it, touches the backboard to prove that he can.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's tapping back. Yeah.
Yeah, I maybe working in the gym to try and get rim. To try and get to the point where he can dunk a tennis ball.
So you're talking he's wearing those shoes, the special Jimmy shoes from Seinfeld?
Do those work? Do they work?
I never tried, but I have to assume yes, based on the back pages of Inside Sports Magazine, to which I was a subscriber in 1991, probably. So I'm going to say yes. No, again, I anticipate that he finished 11th in the SEC this last recruiting class, but that's 26th nationally. They signed two quarterbacks in this class, including a pretty highly rated one in Braden Davis I'm in Delaware, the number one player in Delaware, to be sure, and Tanner Bailey, who decommitted from Oregon and is from somewhere in the South, I think Alabama, and ended up committing to South Carolina. So I think things are looking promising, especially with how, you know, they were able to hit the portal and end up with Spencer Rattler.
This is a guy who at some point in his life had lowered the rim to 8 feet. And so he knows how to conduct himself around the rim, and he's working on getting up there at the 10-foot level.
Yeah.
Wearing the shoes. I like that.
Yeah.
I like wearing the jump shoes.
There's a fearlessness to him.
There is.
In the open floor. It doesn't always result in something extraordinary happening, but that goes a long way.
Steve Sarkisian in Texas, Dan.
All right.
Steve Sarkisian took over for Tom Herman. Tom Herman went 7-3 and got fired.
Yep.
Steve Sarkisian takes over in 2021, goes 5-7. Yep. Second order wins say that they were a bit unlucky. Second order wins has them at about 6.5. So there are a number of different ways that you can parse that. Texas's problems are many and nonspecific. They need better quarterback play. Presumably, they will get some of that with Quinn Ewers, but we haven't seen much of Quinn Ewers to actually rest on that fact. So
sure,
we'll assume that he'll be good because he was the number one overall prospect.
We haven't seen any of Quinn Ewers.
We haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
We don't even really have tape. So there's that component. There is a larger issue about the Texas defense, too. Mm-hmm. For a good long time now, and by good long time, I mean at least 3-4 years, tackling has been a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Tackling in the open field, not in the open field, just general toughness on defense has mm-hmm. been a bit of a concern for the Longhorns. They need to get better. Talent is not an issue, but they play a bit soft on defense, and they need to get better at that. That's been a concern. But that being said, there is no doubt that there is talent there. As ever, in the great state of Texas, it's not just Quinn Ewers.
Right.
Bijan Robinson. We're still talking about Bijan Robinson. He's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Bijan Robinson at running
back. I don't
think
he has a choice, but yeah.
Xavier Worthy, I think, was a big-time bright spot out sure. wide for that offense, emerging as a top target for Quinn Ewers now going into the 22 campaign. So they've got mm-hmm. guys. They've got plenty of talent there. It's just a matter of, can Sark find a way to assemble the pieces and get this program feeling like it's moving to a place with serious momentum? I don't know if we saw that in 2022. I believe that Sark has the know-how, the experience, everything that you need to run a place like Texas. Like, he's been at Alabama. He's been at USC. He's been at Washington, right? He's been at places. Mm-hmm. He knows what it takes to make a big-time program tick.
Sure. Good players. Great players. Yeah.
Great players help, right?
Yeah.
The question is, can he now build sustainable success in Austin? And I don't know if we have enough information at this point to really gauge whether or not it's going to work.
Yes, we do, because we have his freshman year. That's what the show is. It's based on that first year. Did you see enough kernels to say, ooh, I can see what they're going for?
No.
Or did you see enough kernels to say,
no, I didn't.
I don't know if I see much. Okay, well, so then say it with your chest.
I am trying to be optimistic. I'm trying to be optimistic because for as much hay as we've made on the whole Texas is back, Texas is not back thing.
Right.
I don't really want to dunk on Texas, to keep it within the theme here. I want Texas to be back. I want Texas to be interesting.
Okay.
I want Texas going into the SEC to suddenly change the dynamic, to make it harder for Nick Saban, make it harder for everybody on the West Side. Like, I want that storyline. But 5-7, man, I don't know. Like, I kind of hoped that Sark would come in and he'd be this quarterback whisperer, and either Casey Thompson or Hudson Card or whoever would elevate their game and take it to a different level, and Texas would be closer to back going into year two.
So I don't think Texas was necessarily unlucky. I think what those second order wins, when you look at the stats and teams who put up this stat or that stat during a game, they win the game however many percentage of the time. I think Texas was just wildly inconsistent. I think they would put up a bomb quarter where they were incredible. Bomb could be good or bad, I suppose, but they put up a killer quarter and scored 21 points in the first quarter and then just faded and just completely faded and strung together 4 or 5 drives that went 3 and out quickly. And so it was the inconsistency that I think. So like some of the underlying stats were there at times, but the number of times that offense went 3 and out, or the number of times that defense just couldn't tackle anybody or couldn't get into a passing lane. If I'm going to look at the 2021 season as a microcosm for what Sark could be, I think he is going to string together more successful drives on offense. And there wasn't much in terms of the defense. There's talent on this defense. There will be more talent on this defense. I'm with you that I think Pete Kwiatkowski is a good defensive mind and coordinates a good defense. But at the same time, I didn't even see like a half, right? I didn't see a half against a good team where I'm like, they've got it going. Like that's the worry for me.
Yeah.
That their offense is going to play so quickly, good or bad, that it's going to put the defense in a bad spot. Look, the recruiting class was incredible, but that's never been the problem in Austin. The receivers coming in, the offensive linemen coming in, certainly an improvement point. And Quinn Ewers, a talent improvement, we assume, we think, we hope. But No, I think Sark, when, you know, look, the offense took a step back, the defense took a noticeable step back, and the way that they finished their season, if we're looking at buy-in, if we're looking at inspiration, now these are not Sark's guys, so whatever that means, but they lose 4 of 5, three of the losses were competitive, but that includes like, oh, they hung with Kansas. Like, cool, great. I don't know what you want to take away from almost being as good as Kansas, and they were not competitive against Iowa State. That game was, I think, 30-7. So the thing I'm taking away from this Sark in the open floor is maybe dunking early or being able to dunk when he was younger, and every single time he now tries to dunk, he's pulling a hamstring. Yeah. Or like pulling up and like passing it off to somebody else, or just settling for, like, I think he can fly high. I think there are too many things in the way for him to consistently fly high.
You have no idea how high I can fly.
I don't have an idea.
I have no idea.
Because it's not about what we think Sark's ceiling is in this case, because we know what the ceiling could be hypothetically. I just think too many things are going to continually get in the way at Texas, that they might have a 10-2 season and go to a New Year's Six game and follow it up with a 7-5 season. So I'm saying occasional impressive dunk, but the hamstrings are always going to be a factor here.
Here's what concerns me.
And maybe he's hamstrung.
There you go.
By those around him at Texas that seem to hamstring some other guys.
Pros pro Dan Rubenstein.
Here's
what
concerns
me.
Of course. Yeah.
You mentioned the inconsistency. Inconsistency is fine.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about, and I use this example all the time, you're Notre Dame in year one under Brian Kelly.
Right.
And I use this example a lot because it's a great example to me of a team that was wildly inconsistent, but at least felt like it was playing hard every game. It at least felt right. Like there was some sort of theme, some sort of higher organizational structure. Even if you didn't always see the results, you could at least sort of see the finish line. You could see back then what kind of program he was trying to build. And he was pretty successful at doing it. I don't know if we have that kind of vision after year one with Steve Sarkisian. I don't know if we've gotten there. Maybe we'll get there in year two. Maybe Quinn Ewers will take that offense to a different level, but certainly not on defense, man. Like, on defense, it was frustrating. And on defense, there were plenty of plays where it felt like guys were just not playing that hard.
Right.
And so that's worrying to me. And I don't know if that's the kind of thing that you can just fix with a full offseason, with a new mantra. I don't know. But that's what concerns me. I hope I'm wrong. But that's what I worry about.
What was Brian Kelly's first year? Was 2010?
2010, yeah.
So the 2010 Notre Dame team improved from 6-6 to 8-5, but defensively, which is where I think effort and caring and motivation comes from, because tackling and defense is a lot about effort.
Yep.
65th in 2009 to 13th in 2010. There you go.
Yep. So effort.
Yes.
Right? Are they playing hard? Are they not playing hard? There were too many examples this past season where you had a wonder about Texas.
Yep.
Are they playing hard? Are their heads in this? What's going on? And that, I'm not saying that's a harbinger of what's to come. I'm not saying he's going to short the dunk and he's going to land on his face. All I'm saying is, like you said, watch out for the hamstrings.
Hamstrings.
Watch out for the hamstrings. Okay.
Hammies. Okay. Next coach.
Next coach. Let's do a couple more here. Let's talk about Jed Fish.
Oh, man. I would love to. Talk about a guy wearing the special jumping shoes. This guy's putting in the work. He's doing squats. He's jumping onto ledges all the time. It's the desire to dunk that appears to be more pronounced than perhaps some of his compatriots on this list. He is exhausting. He's 5'7". There are Spud Webbian, you know, tendencies here. And this is also...
You have no idea how high I can fly.
But the work he's doing on his calves,
yeah,
I think, is unmatched. Continue.
Jed Fish is doing some freestyle walking just when he's out in the park with friends, mm-hmm. jumping up on benches, up on railings.
Yep.
Just proving that he can be nimble, agile, yep. if he has to.
Yeah.
You can see it. You can yep. see the early trappings of that with Jed Fish. He definitely kicked up some dust in year one, despite the fact that they only went 1-11. They only went 1-11. Now, that was an improvement from the 0-5 campaign
mm-hmm.
in 2020. You'll take the one. And you'll take a 2.6 second order wins number for whatever that's worth. You'll take it. Yeah. It's better than one.
Agree.
You'll take it. But it does feel like there is at least a vibe here. There's a vibe. Guys like him. Recruiting's been decent enough. They just picked up a 4-star yesterday, right? Forget his name, but
the quarterback of the future. Yeah, I think he's from Colorado. A quarterback. Yep.
So it just seems like people really like Jed Fish. For whatever that's worth, the results weren't there, but the momentum and the positivity is at least a change from where Arizona's been over the last, I don't know, 3 years now. So taking that for what it is, it feels like a situation where maybe he's got the layup down with his strong side.
Mm-hmm.
He's working to get the layup going with his left hand. I don't know if Jed Fish is righty or lefty. I'll have to look that one up. But nonetheless, that's where we're at with this. Just trying to be more efficient at getting the 2 points when it's there in front of you.
Does anybody know if Jed Fish is righty or lefty? How would we know any of that?
I'm going to look this up.
Unless we watch, I know Jim Harbaugh is righty because I've seen him throw a football as a NFL quarterback and, you know, warming up for games inexplicably. But as a coach, I have no idea if Jed Fish is righty or lefty. But I think what you bring up is something interesting. I think he's going to be able to jump. I don't think he's going to be dunking, but I think he's going to have variety in his finishes. Reverses, right hand, left hand, hesitations, floaters. Like, I think he's giving himself variety, especially because of what UCLA and Arizona State currently look like on the recruiting trail. In Southern California, Arizona, on the West Coast, whatever. I think Arizona, and so they pick up the best receiver on the West Coast in this pass class in, I mean, Teratora McMillan, I don't know how to pronounce his name yet, but he was the jewel of Oregon's receiving core class. And so when Mario Cristobal leaves, he ends up going to Arizona. They hit the portal hard. I just, you know, hiring Don Brown, I think in year one, now of course he leaves for the UMass job, but I think what he should be able to do on the trail and in hiring assistants will continue to be impressive. And I think that the height of what Arizona can be is probably winning the South if things go terribly wrong for places like Utah and USC. And they can. It can. Things can go terribly wrong for basically everybody. So I think he can put them in a position to do that. But also, dunking is probably... Look, Arizona has won the South. They've played for Pac-12 titles once or twice. So I'm optimistic. They got better on offense slightly. They got better on defense with a very specific vision of, I don't know, just blitz every down. I don't know. Just send people. It can't be worse than what we were doing in 2020. So I appreciate that. And I'm encouraged that Arizona will be a bowl team, a fun bowl team, which tells me that Jed Fish would be skilled in the air, finishing in a variety of ways.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dan. By the way, I'm currently watching a YouTube video here from the Pac-12 networks trying to discern whether or not he writes with his right hand, whether he's holding anything in his left hand, how this is working. So we're going to need to figure this out. This is now going to be my off-season project. But regardless, I think I'm with you on Jed Fish.
Right.
I think I'm with you. And
good.
Despite the fact that that felt like a weird hire.
Mm-hmm.
In the very beginning, because wasn't that a situation where like the president or somebody within that organization and that program liked him more than the others? And it didn't feel like it was a great fit, at least on the surface. But the results, at least under the surface, appear to be there, even though the wins aren't there yet.
Yeah, they were competitive against Oregon until relatively close to the end of that game. They gave some teams fits and better than their record indicates. And I also think he would be very smart to go after kids transferring from the Midwest and saying, hey, it's Arizona. It's warm all the time. We've got a bunch of attractive humans here from Southern California attending. Come on up, come on down, come on over. And so you can dip into Texas. It's also like an underrated home field advantage if people show up, in that it's far away. Tucson's not the easiest place to get to for all of these schools, like weird night games in the desert. I think it can get like low-key hostile in Tucson in the right circumstance. They'll rush the field before they lose.
Yeah,
like all sorts of things happen with Arizona games. So I think there's like a secret home field advantage there in the right circumstance.
Lance Leipold at Kansas.
Yeah.
Went 2-10 That is an improvement by 2 games over the 0-9 campaign in 2020. I love Lance Leipold. I am not able to be objective when it comes to Lance Leipold. I love the hire. This is a serious football coach. It's not a PR stunt like when they hired Charlie Weiss or Les Miles.
Right. And David Beatty was inexperienced and they took a chance, but like Lance Leipold has won as a head coach. Yeah.
This is a serious guy. This is a serious guy who knows how to run a football program. Now, Kansas is not without obvious disadvantages. It's still pretty much a basketball school, but there's at least a glimmer of success back in the Mangino era when Kansas proved that as a football program, yeah, they can go to an Orange Bowl, right? Like it's doable. And perhaps even more doable looking out ahead as Texas and Oklahoma are going to be exiting stage right, going over to the SEC. So it's, you know, there's an opportunity, I think, for Kansas to try and just build something on the ground floor and try to get respectable, try to get to the stage where maybe they can get to a bowl game again. I think it's there. I think it's doable. It's really a talent issue at Kansas. They need talent. They need to work on roster construction.
Yes, of course. Roster wrinkles. Kansas dramatically improved on offense behind that young backfield at quarterback and running back, you know, scoring all the points that they did, especially later on in the season. The Texas win dramatically improved on offense, got worse on defense for sure, which was kind of tricky based on where they were. Defense is going to take a minute, but they were competitive in those, you know, they win, what was it, one of their last 5 games, I believe, right? They win one of their last 5, but those last 2 losses were competitive against TCU, an incredibly down TCU, and I would argue a pretty disappointing West Virginia back half of the season. But still, be in a place to be competitive. Have your team up for games to potentially beat teams that are in what we believe to be better spots as a program. So I'm encouraged. I don't know the heights. That what I see as Lance Leipold in the open floor is just going for it, getting swatted. Going for it, getting stripped. Going for it, getting blocked hard. But still attacking. Still knowing that, you know, maybe there is going to be pity applause and pity cheers when he finally does make a layup when they're down 38 at the end of a game. But he made the layup. And then maybe next game he's making a couple of those layups. And maybe the next game he's pump faking one of those guys who's swatting him. So progress, fearlessness, experience, and resilience is what I'm seeing Lance Leipold in the open floor. He's not Duncan. He's probably not, doesn't have a finger roll, but I think there can be an efficiency and a resilience to his attitude towards finishing at the hoop.
I agree with you. I also think that there is reason for optimism because of Jalen Daniels.
Sure.
Their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Is he related to Jaden Daniels?
I don't believe so.
Both are from Southern California, but
pretty common last name. Yeah.
Not to be confused with Jaden Daniels, who is transferring.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably not to Kansas, but Jalen Daniels is a guy who I think folks are excited about. You know, saw limited action, but in that limited action, it's pretty good.
Yep.
So it just seems to me the fact that this is a guy who has been there before. He knows the fundamentals. This is not a tomahawk jam situation.
Right.
This is not a 360 alley-oop situation. This is...
Is it, what's is it always ollie? I grew up on the West Coast, you East Coast. Is it alley-oop on the East Coast? Because I always heard alley-oop.
Oh, I've done alley-oop.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I mean, it could be a regional difference.
He's not doing any of those frills. Lance Leipold just knows that you need 5 guys on the court at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start at square one. These are the rules. A bucket is worth 2 points unless it's worth 3, unless it's worth 1, right? Like he knows the rules and he knows all the things that you need to in order to start building a basketball team. It's not even about the dunk for Lance Leipold. This is what Kansas needs. This is the kind of guy that Kansas needs. They don't need the PR stunt. They need somebody who knows the freaking rules. So I'm not even going to play the game with Lance Leipold. I'm not going to worry about is he dunking, is he laying it up. He just knows how many guys need to be out there. And I think that's a great starting point for Kansas. So I remain very optimistic about the program. I think he will build this thing, at least make it look like it is somewhat organized. That will be a huge market improvement from where it's been at.
I think Lance Leipold at Kansas, trying to hurl this Kansas body towards the hoop, he's torn an Achilles. He's been poked in the eye, and he's, you know, ruptured a disc. He's definitely had plantar fasciitis issues. So he's you know, rolling down the court with knee braces, with ankle braces, with rec specs, but he's out there. Nothing's keeping him down.
Is he the kind of guy in the pickup game who's calling fouls?
No, I think he is the one who is barreling over people, doing anything it takes to get to the hoop, and is playing a little bit too rough.
Not calling fouls. Okay.
Not calling fouls.
Interesting.
He's the one saying, I thought we were men here. This is a men's game, not a boys' game. Okay. Any other coaches you want to hit?
Very quickly, Gus Malzahn. Malzahn went 9-4 in year one at UCF. I think it was even more impressive because he lost his quarterback.
Yeah.
And was sort of doing things on the fly. I'm more optimistic about that than I was initially.
I think he can dunk.
Yeah.
I think Gus Malzahn's dunking in Orlando. There's a lightness to Gus Malzahn. The connections to high schools across the South, the local connections to high schools in Florida, in Central Florida, and has that reputation of developing interesting offenses. I don't know, the quarterback reputation probably isn't there, but I think it's going to be a talented team. And you look at the American, sans Sonny Dykes.
Sans?
Sans. 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 I think it's Sans. Sans Sonny Dykes. Like, Luke Fickell's going to be around for at least a little bit. The competition in the American, to me, it's set up pretty nicely. Like, Navy, I don't know if they're ever getting back to an interesting place, to where they were. I'm kind of optimistic that UCF can really solidify itself. Now, Houston is, I think, certainly going to be in that conversation moving forward. But I don't know. And like, ECU is fine. Tulsa can be fine. Like, I don't know how much I'm threatened by the totality of the American right now. And I think UCF can challenge for it year in and year out.
I think this is a dunk, sort of like we would see in the actual NBA All-Star game, where guys are just running around dunking. Guys are running around taking five steps without dribbling.
Yeah.
And nobody's playing any defense.
Yeah. That's not fair. That's not fully.
In the NBA All-Star game?
No, I know. I'm saying to compare it to UCF, where it's just wide open showboaty type dunks. I don't know if I'm that far with Gus Malzahn. I more look at Gus Malzahn as like, he went keto and lost 45 pounds and his vertical increased by 4 inches. And in this case, I suppose the bad fats and belly fats and subcutaneous fats are all Auburn related. I don't know. That's the weight he lost. They're like, oh man, my vertical increased by 4 inches since I left Auburn. That there is just a lightness to Gus Malzahn. Now, they still won games this year after losing Dylan Gabriel. It wasn't always pretty. It was absolutely not always pretty. But what UCF, the offense was noticeably worse from where it was when Dylan Gabriel and Josh Heupel joined forces in 2020. The defense was noticeably better. They finished the year out winning 4 of 5. They were not competitive against SMU, but and those four wins were against bad teams, but that's what you should do. You should beat bad teams even when you're beat up. So I'm high on UCF and the Gus bus.
To get what he got out of Mikey Keene at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
After Dylan Gabriel went down, I thought it was actually quite impressive.
Maybe
the reputation is not there at quarterback. I agree.
Right.
And I'm not saying Mikey Keene is like a Heisman front runner. I'm not.
No. That's okay.
They did a good job with him. They did a good job maximizing what they could get out of him.
I'm high.
Yeah.
Take that out of context.
Final one. Vandy and Clark Lee.
Okay.
Where are you at with Vandy and Clark Lee? You were very high in Clark Lee. I was very high on Clark Lee.
As a coordinator. Yeah, that's true. Vandy's offense was decently better. The defense was decently better. They lose their final five. They gave a decent fight to Mizzou. in a losing effort in those last five games. I think it's just, it's going to take a while. I think he is not dunking, but I think he can get to a place where he is a contributing member of a fast break. He's not necessarily finishing strong, but he's getting hockey assists. He's getting the ball to the guy getting it to the ball who's dunking it. He is a true glue guy. And so I think he can turn Vandy into a decent contributing member of the SEC. That might mean winning four games a year. It might mean winning 5 to 6.5 games a year or something. But I think he can get this program because I think there is an unusual amount of buy-in in that there are not that many Vandy guys who had the profile that Clark Lea had when he was at Notre Dame. That he is not somebody who is looking to get the most out of Vandy and quickly flip it into another job. He wants to build sustained success. And I think that's a different approach than a lot of guys would have at a place like Vandy. And so,
yeah,
I think he can turn... He himself in the open floor is not necessarily finishing strong, but is a glue member of a fast break.
He's almost playing by different rules at Vandy. Instead of this being a game where he's trying to dunk, maybe he's just getting really good at playing horse. Maybe he's got a specific shot that he knows is difficult.
Right.
And he can put an O or an S on the board to make things interesting along the way. Maybe it's, you know, he throws it down, bounces it up for a basket.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got some sort of weird angle. Maybe he's shooting back over the backboard. Have you done that? You've done that, right? Kind of on the angle, you're shooting back over. It's a hard shot to make. Maybe Clark Lea is trying to get really good at one of those gimmick type things.
He's running a full court press system.
It's just
where you're
going to
give up a lot. Yeah.
A little bit different. He's playing by different rules, marching to his own drummer. He's at a place like Vandy, which it's tough to win at Vandy.
Yep.
It is tough to win. And I think, to your point, Vandy people are okay with that. They're okay with that.
It's a baseball school.
They're okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be a little different. Maybe we don't grade this on the same scale. So I'm not even thinking in terms of dunk, Dan. I'm thinking in terms of, is this a guy who can challenge when we're playing horse? And I think if you give him a few years, which they have to do, he's a Vandy guy. They have to. I think that, I think that he can get them playing better. We did see improvement in year one.
Mm-hmm.
We saw improvement. If we continue to see improvement, then maybe we get to the point where we're talking about, all right, maybe we can dunk on an 8-foot rim. But for now, just getting the ball in the hoop, making it look interesting, giving people a reason to feel good about things. I think that's where we're at.
Quickly, Boise State, Utah State will hit Mountain West quickly. I think Blake Anderson's dunking. I just think he's going to have Utah State in a good place. We saw how often he won at Arkansas State. We see the, not the issues, but the up and down nature of the Mountain West with, you know, Kalen DeBoer leaving and San Diego State still not being able to field an offense no matter who their coach is, and San Jose State going downhill, Hawaii going downhill. Like, there's just a number of factors here that I think there's a vacuum. And Utah State, yes, it was such an incredible low with Gary Anderson being brought back in and then leaving the way that he did. I think there's stability. I think there's excitement. I think they'll continue to hit the portal hard. I have Blake Anderson as an unsplashy, successful dunker in that specific gym.
Yeah.
How about that? Boise a little bit less so, but I think there's a creativity to Boise and Andy Avalos. So Boise's offense, it regressed a bit, but the defense improved decently. They won 4 of their last 5 to finish. I know there's the roster is not, I don't believe, in an amazing place, but I think Andy Avalos will utilize speed and creativity to get to the hoop more often than not and be an asset to a team that likes to run.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is we don't have any Tomahawk jams here. We don't have any star-studded dunkers in this group.
I think we could get an occasional flashy dunk from Tennessee. I think we can get an occasional flashy dunk from Texas. I think Tennessee will be playing above the rim more often than Texas.
Yeah.
But I don't have a surefire. I mean, I have UCF and Utah State as dunkers, but no, there is a big man in both of their ways.
None of these guys are getting in the dunk contest, at least not at this juncture. They could get there.
Sure.
If Jed Fish keeps wearing the shoes, who knows? But
yeah,
we're not there yet.
No, we're not. Can I say what you normally say?
Please.
Fun show.
Yeah. It's my line.
I know.
It was a good show. It was a good show.
I had a
for
good
5 minutes notice. This is a pretty good show.
I miss basketball camp. I was a good little player, Ty. Basketball is an incredibly fun sport to be. And I peaked when I was 9 or 10 years old, to be clear. But it was an incredibly fun sport to be way better than my friends at. That's bad English. I could cross up my friends when I was in elementary school and I could toy with them. And it's a really fun sport. Like, baseball's pretty fun, but you need a lot of people. Baseball's fun. Football's fun. You need a lot of people, but you can torch people, you know, as a receiver or whatever. Basketball is that one-on-one mentality where you could really goof on your friends and toy with them. And that was me when I was 9 or 10.
I had a basketball hoop out back.
Yeah.
That we're pretty certain was actually at 11 feet.
Well, you're also a shorter guy.
No. Nothing to do with it.
Okay.
I had friends who were very good at basketball.
Oh, okay.
We were all certain that the hoop was too high. It could have been because the driveway was on a little bit of an angle.
Mm-hmm. That'll contribute.
But it may have been over 10 feet. It was always tougher to come to the tie dome and play backyard basketball.
The thing you missed out on, well, that is a nice, you know, home court advantage. The 11-foot hoop.
It was huge. It was huge. You could talk to Mom H about it. There was also a power line that was in the way if you shot from the left corner.
Yeah.
There was a power line that got in the way, and so you had to sort of, like, you had to rifle it to get under the wire. You had to go, like, a punch shot and go off, or you had to really rainbow it, which was tough because you were playing uphill, to avoid the power lines.
The thing you missed out on by not concentrating on basketball. Maybe, I don't know if you went to baseball camp. I don't know if you'd had any sports camp experience.
Sure.
But the cornerstone part for me of going to basketball camp, and you would have somebody host the camp, right? It would be the coach of a local team or a player that's from the area or something like that. It was an easy way to make a buck, I assume, is the visiting speakers.
Yeah.
So I went to Jack Haley, who was like the 13th man on the Bulls, and I went to his camp at a couple different local schools, and he would bring in the basketball players he knew. So, but they wouldn't be, and he did, okay, he brought in Dennis Rodman, and that was rad. But other than Dennis Rodman, it would be like Don McLean, who was like a very solid jump shooter for UCLA and had a solid NBA career. But like, there was nothing about Don McLean's game that would really translate to like a 9-year-old. There was nothing flashy or impressive about getting a Don McLean signed basketball.
Right.
But you'd get all these guys speaking, and maybe they're being paid, whatever they were, you know, they was doing favors for their friends, that like you could have gone to like a Fran O'Hanlon Lafayette basketball camp and you just missed the lessons of like a random Patriot League shooting guard, or like calling in a favor and getting like Dana Barros to come speak at like your Lehigh basketball camp. And like, any of these guys, when you are that age, you're like, oh man, this guy is the 10th. He averages 4.8 points for the Philadelphia 76ers. And they would come and they would like sometimes play against other kids. And so then all the other campers would watch and like, oh, when a kid would score a basket over an NBA player. And there were, I mean, Michael Jordan has a camp and there are like those famous videos of that too. But of going to like these very regional camps. And like, I went to a Lorenzo Romar, you know, Pepperdine, UCLA, like he would like bring kids up, and he's the coach of Pepperdine, and they would kill time where he would just juke 11-year-olds, like 51-year-old Lorenzo Romar. And everybody would have a blast watching these kids trip all over the place. That was the formative experience that you missed out on not going to basketball camp.
Yeah. Any NBA player, even the guy who scores like 2 points a
game, man,
on the open floor with,
oh yeah,
nobody contesting a shot.
Well, like, also these NBA players are not used to being celebrated because they're the guys at some of these camps, right? The seventh man, the ninth man, or something like that. And then they would have like a counselor rebound for them as they would put up 17 footers and make all of them because they were NBA players shooting uncontested 17 footers. And you're watching them, they're like, this guy should be way more famous. He's hitting every 17 footer without anybody guarding him.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's shooting 1,000 of them a day. Right. So it was just, it was an incredible experience as a little one. That's all. Send your kids to basketball camp.
The halcyon days, Dan, of sports.
I had to look up Fran O'Hanlon's name. I didn't. That was not an easy pull for me.
That's a deep cut. All right. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening. Don't forget to go on out to verballers.com if you want to check out the bonus features that we offer alongside this episode, in addition to the other bonus content that we're going to be putting out here in the coming days and weeks. We would encourage you again, verballers.com. SolidGiveaway.com is back with the Jonathan Taylor tailback signed mini helmet. It's the alternate Wisconsin red helmet. If you go to solidgiveaway.com, I've got a picture of it there.
Nice.
Just got to do a few quick, free, and easy things to get your name in the hat. We're going to draw that winner at some point early next month.
I'm learning about Fran O'Hanlon as we speak. He's been the Lafayette coach since 1995.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the Venezuelan league champion as a coach in 1983. He runs Venezuela. Shout out Caracas. Oh my God. What a resume.
We should do as an off-topic show, like an old school sports episode where either we bring on somebody who runs.
We just shout names at each other.
Well, yeah. Somebody who runs a podcast on either the basketball, football,
Soccer,
baseball side, and just talk it out like in the early 90s.
We can just select a year.
Yeah.
We can just select 1994, 1992, and just discuss the year in sports.
Yeah.
And every single story. I 92 like this. Would be nice because you've got the Olympics.
The Olympics. Yep. Dream Team. That was Dream Team, right?
That was Dream Team.
Yeah.
Fran O'Hanlon is...
or we have on Fran O'Hanlon.
So he has been the coach for, if my math serves, about 27 years.
Yeah.
Fran O'Hanlon's tenure at Lafayette is old enough to rent a car. That's wild. Good for Fran.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks so much for downloading, listening, playing along with our madness at home.
Yes.
We will be back, at least on the public feed, next Tuesday. Have yourself a good weekend. As always, stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.